Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 28th, 2012. A lot of material to cover this evening, and what I did this week as a little bit of a change of pace, I have a lot of listener mail that comes in, and it's really a lot of good mail. So every now and then I try to concentrate on these topics that people have brought up, try to dig in deeper so that you get a little bit of insight, because of course what you're presented in the news and what you see happening to you around you a lot of times, including the weather, it just doesn't add up. Why is there a tremendous amount of rain in Canada just north of Colorado, and Colorado is burning up? When we talk about climate change, could there be climate control? And it's kind of a subtle thing, because climate is really a long-term trend in weather. Weather and climate are different, and a lot of times meteorologists today, and this is one of the points I'll be making, that more and more today you're going to see these broad stroke brush interpretations, like global warming has caused this, or other kind of broad stroke concepts. And but the details, when you look at the details, they don't add up. So what I'm saying is meteorologists and other government-sponsored scientists are going to give you that broad stroke reason that there's some meteorologists claiming that tornadoes were spawned with the fires in Colorado. Well, sure, there are atmospheric effects, but what's really going on here? This is stranger than strange. And so what I'm saying is these government news outlets, which are very much government controlled, are giving these broad stroke explanations. For example, as I did my show last week, there was a article being published on National Public Radio, which I did not have, wasn't aware of when the show came out, but shortly thereafterwards, I discovered this, that National Public Radio put an article out saying that the Duluth flood, which I talked about a lot last week on my show, that was a result of global warming. And I just about fell off my chair. It was like, why are they promoting this article? NPR, and who bought them? At any rate, what a ridiculous concept. And it negates the details. It gives that broad stroke brush with just let's paint it all over global warming. No, that Duluth storm formed overnight in the middle of the night, and the rain in that storm, tremendous inundation, 10 inches of rain in about 10 hours, that's a lot of rain. And of course it just destroyed that small city in northeastern Minnesota on the edge of Lake Superior. But the point is that the water in that storm developed in that storm in a short amount of time. Well, where did it come from? The only place it could come from is outer space. But you have that misinformation hitting the public. Oh, global warming. This is the result of global warming. Oh my goodness, but you know, this is an educational process. You're going to see a lot more of this. They're attributing the Colorado fires to global warming, global climate change. You see what I'm saying? Anyway, I'll be delving into those topics here, but first, relating this back a little bit to the ancient history. That's why I'm trying to concentrate on these ancient history disasters, because first of all, we have not seen disasters on that scale in modern history. Those were disasters that took this planet to its knees. Modern science denies all of this. And so what I'm trying to do is put life into those ancient disasters and say how they happened, what was going on, What did the people really see and feel and smell when those were going on? This one thing in one of my books, that's actually an article I wrote in the early 1980s for a journal. It was called From Exodus to Voyager 2, the Velikovsky Connection. And in there I talk about the burning pillar of fire, the Moses burning pillar of fire, and how it would have reeked of ozone in that area at the time. And, of course, ozone is a triplet of oxygen instead of oxygen that we typically breathe. But during those lightning and electrical conditions, ozone is prevalent in the air. And so just to give you an idea, here are the Israelites. There's Moses on one side. They're backed up against the Red Sea. And here comes the Pharaoh's chariots and armies in mass coming after them, coming over the hill. And all of a sudden they look up and there's a pillar of fire that's literally blocking the advancing armies of Pharaoh. And they've got the Red Sea to their back and the earth is shaking. All of a sudden the Red Sea parts and they've got one place to go. And so they go across that short expanse of water, which is now separated out because of tidal action going on in that narrow strip of the Red Sea up on the west side, the northwest side of what is now the Sinai Peninsula. So they cross over, and as they get to the other side, this is in the middle of the night, remember. There's enough light from that pillar of fire that they are able to see their way across this open channel of the Red Sea. And then when morning breaks, the Pharaoh's armies come charging through, and the ocean sweeps back over them, only to be found about 20 years ago, the chariots right in that region there. These were real stories, everybody. This is not fantasy. In science, our illustrious modern scientists deny all of this, deny the truth. And why are they there? Well, they're tier two scientists who are there because they're getting a paycheck. They're not good scientists. That's why they're in the spots they're in. But they'll keep saying that as long as they keep getting their paycheck. And if you put 20 times more scientists in that box out there in the field, they would all say the same thing. So rows and columns of PhD scientists, whether they're from MIT or Harvard or from Europe or England, all saying the same thing. It doesn't impress me a lot, because they're all there with the same mentality. And the good scientists, the really good ones, have been plucked out of there long ago and are working in what I call Tier 1 science. And you'll never see their names, never hear from them. And occasionally they come in and out. They weave in and out of the scientific meetings, that occur, the AGU meetings, etc., where the scientists come from and schlock around kind of and do their thing. The scientists that make up what everybody thinks is Tier 1 science, but it's not. It's Tier 2, and that's the garbage science that's pawned off on the public. So I like to keep pounding on that, because there's a lot of new people listening to this show. This is all explained in my books and my DVDs in more detail, and why this exists, etc. But at any rate, let me get going on some of the listener mail here. This is really, I really appreciate the listener mail. And like I say, every now and then I just dedicate a show to this because it's such important, interesting information. Here's an article. Iceland dismantles the corrupt government, then arrests all Rothschild bankers. You're not going to hear about this on the evening news in the good old USA, land of the free and the brave. Iceland tore away finally, and I want to go through this, and so I'll give credit to where this is being printed. It came from me through a friend of mine, another talk show host, Daniel Johns, and anyway, he sent the article. June 20th, 2012, the article, since the 1900s, it says the vast majority of the American population has dreamed of saying no to the unconstitutional, corrupt Rothschild, Rockefeller banking criminals, but no one has dared. Why? It says just half of our nation, and the 1% who pay the majority of taxes just say no more. Our government would literally change overnight. And why is it so hard for people to understand that? That by simply not giving your money to large corporations who take your jobs offshore, etc., you can promote your your constitutional rights. It'll accomplish much more than violence. Remember, they want you to react violently because then they can point and say, look at all those crazy anti-government people. We have to protect you, little old ladies and little old men out there. They're one of the techniques. But anyway, in Iceland, without ever firing a shot, they threw the government out, reelected, and are writing a new constitution. And by the way, that's a constitution that looks remarkably like what we had in 1776. What happened to that? But anyway, what the interesting part is, they have arrested 9 of the bankers, and they're running them through the court system. These guys are going to prison for destroying their economy, for creating economic chaos, or what we call economic terrorism. You want to look at terrorists, let's look right down Wall Street, New York City. You don't have to look any farther, and that's where it all came from. And now they've got little Obama up there, the marionette puppet in the White House, and signing over along with the head of the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, and he's allowing the banks to sell off foreclosed homes in bulk. Only rich entities who are pre-approved can buy your foreclosed house and then rent it back to you at market value. They'll get it for pennies on the dollar. But anyway, last week, I'm just going on in this article, 9 people were arrested in London and Reykjavik for a possible responsibility of Iceland's financial collapse in 2008. So at any rate, I just wanted to let you know, and then just to give you the standard affair of the international banking community, the International Monetary Fund, which is the partly the U.S. run controlled. It's the branch of the international Rothschild banking community in Europe and England. And by the way, that's where the Queen gets her power, is from the Rothschilds, not because she's a sweet little old lady. She represents the gold that was stolen from the New World, which gives those people their wealth. It was all stolen, and that they continue to steal. These are not nice people. And the sooner they all end up in prison and throw away the key, economic terrorism reigning on the world today. But at any rate, International Monetary Fund loaning them money, and then the government of Iceland at the time rubber stamping those loans, where the people had to pay for 35% or 35 years to pay off this loan. They finally said, no, we are not slaves to the bankers. We don't owe them. We're not going to pay them. And, of course, there's sanctions. There's economic sanctions. All kinds of bad things are going to happen to the people of Iceland. But they just said no. They just said no anymore. And that's why a lot of the Latin American countries are considered axis of evil, because they don't buy into that European banking cartel. That's what's going on in Iran. There's two things going on in Iran. First of all, they are selling their oil out of the euro in the American dollar. They got off the dollar. That's what happened when they went in to Saddam in Iraq. He went off the dollar and started selling his oil on the world market. That's when the troops went in to take over. And remember what George Bush said, we're doing it for the children. Oh, man, are these people sick. But at any rate, Iceland just threw them out and arrested the bankers. Those guys are, the rest of them are running scared in Europe somewhere, hiding. But I like that. I like that. Bankers running scared and hiding from being arrested and convicted. And that's where to do it, too, is at that intermediate level, because the big guys on top have their puppets, their pawns, their little workers out there that are making a good living off of stealing from everybody else. So at any rate, yeah, arrest those middlemen, throw them in prison, and without those worker bees out there doing their dirty work, the Rockefellers are nothing. So anyway, I like that story. I'll be covering more on that in the future. Okay, on processed food, you know that this spring, by the way, I should give an update. This spring, as I did in starting in 2008, I sold the corn seed and distributed that. And this time, it was mainly within the U.S., although a lot of people ordered and then were able to take that out of the U.S. or get it out of the U.S. I didn't directly send it out of the U.S. myself just because of complications that we ran into before. But at any rate, that was an effort to get that corn seed out there, and it went far and wide, and people divided it up and resent it. Just 250 of those corn seeds would be enough to reestablish the world corn crop, the original corn of the family farm back in the 1930s and before. So at any rate, I have gotten responses back through channels, and so that I know is out there successfully growing. So that makes me feel real good. That's my little way of stabbing Monsanto in the foot, because that's another group that, wow, those people have to be simply arrested and put in prison. There's no other way, because they're psycho. They're ridiculously psycho people. A lot of psychos out there in high powerful places. And of course, they congregate there. What a better place to make money than to be hooked up with the government and all of the agencies of the government, none of who were elected. But here's an article that comes in from a listener. I believe it's Patrick. It says, "This week, a raccoon killed one of my pet hens and injured another." This is a listener email. "So a raccoon killed one of their pet hens and injured another. My neighbor brought over a humane cage trap so we could relocate the coon. We baited it with canned sardines. 9:30 p.m. last night, I watched the coon circle the cage and then turn and run back into the woods. When I went out this morning to remove the sardines from the cage, before it started to smell, I noticed that even the flies and ants would not touch it. Something is wrong with the sardines when a hungry animal and insects will not touch it. Years ago, I read that healthy animals will not touch irradiated meat. Do you think this was done on purpose, or perhaps these fish could have been caught in areas of the ocean that had high levels of radiation? Have any of your other listeners noticed anything like this?" So this person is asking for other listeners to respond if you have other stories. And I know I've heard of this too. I actually had other emails kind of like this in the past, but I thought that was a very interesting story. So if you have any cases of such, you know, where you had food, I know I have a friend who bought some beans, I think it was at Walmart, was the specific place. And our good old friends at Walmart, I don't like those people. You won't catch me in a Walmart store. Bad group of people there. Them and Monsanto all belong in the same cast. They came out of the same cast. But at any rate, Walmart? Am I just picking on big business? No. They have marketing which takes your information and then processes it and sells it. or uses it within the company. No, I don't like Walmart at all. But at any rate, and plus the technique, here's another problem with Walmart and the big chain stores. What do? They come into an area, all of the money goes out of that area, and they destroy the local businesses. Across this country, over the past 50 years, places like Target, Walmart, and the list goes on, moving into small communities, medium and city-sized communities, destroying local business. That's why I don't like them. The small businesses were the core of this country. They're not anymore. Now we have a never-ending set of chain stores. And the second thing that Walmart does is, okay, say you got a contract. Say you're producing a product. I don't care if it's eyeshadow or toilet paper, whatever your product. You go in and, oh, wow, big deal. You got a contract with Walmart. Gee, the business is going to be great from now on. But within about 6 months, Walmart puts on the shelf right next to yours their competing product for half price. They're probably having it made at the same place or in China, some knockoff that's exactly like your product. Then they undersell you and they drive you out of business after they've basically stolen your product and remarketed under their broad marketing name, just like Target. Yeah, so they're just destroying middle America, American manufacturing. No, I don't like Walmart, Target. Don't like any of those places. Okay, so here's another article. This comes in from, looks like Terry. It says, 3 weeks ago, dozens of cattle died in central Texas after eating genetically modified meadow grass. Toxicology reports blame cyanide poisoning. The farmers, and by the way, the article that this is referring to is from CBS News. It says the farmers' genetically modified grass was then tested and was found to have mutated and was producing cyanide gas. And now they have tested other farms in this area and around the country and found this is true. Let me finish reading this email. It says, a number of other Texas farmers then had their same genetically modified grass tested, and their grass also tested positive for cyanide. This grass had been planted 15 years ago. So what is next to mutate? GM corn, soybeans, wheat? The majority of processed foods produced in the U.S. today contain genetically modified foods, and the government doesn't want these foods labeled as GM foods. This has got to be the best reason to grow our own food from non-GMO seeds. Okay, so here's the article. And this is pretty strange, but it's true. Okay, this is from a CBS. CBS News, Elgin, Texas, a mysterious mass death of a herd of cattle was prompted a federal investigation in central Texas. Preliminary test results are blaming the death on the grass the cows were eating, and they got sick. The cows dropped dead several weeks ago on an 80-acre ranch owned by Jerry Abel in Elgin, just east of Austin in Texas, of course. Abel says he's been using the fields for cattle grazing and hay for 15 years. A lot of leaf. It's good grass, tested high in protein. It should have been perfect. He told KEYE, this is a subsidiary, looks like a radio station in that area. The grass is genetically modified form of Bermuda known as Tifton 85. So farmers and ranchers, if you have Tifton 85 growing out there, which is it's a modified Bermuda grass in your fields, and remember that this particular rancher had planted this 15 years ago, and now that grass is mutating. They don't know into what. So at any rate, this rancher turned the cattle out into this field. He had them, like many ranchers and farmers, he had these fields divided off with fencing. So when he let these cows into the new area to eat, within a day they were all dead. It says, when we opened that gate to that fresh gas, they were all anxious to get into that. 3 weeks ago, the cattle had just been turned out to enjoy the fresh grass, and something went terribly wrong. When our trainer first heard the bellowing, he thought our pregnant heifer may have been having a calf or something, but when he got down there, virtually all of the steers and heifers were on the ground. Some were already dead, and the others were already in convulsions. Within hours, 15 of the 18 cattle were dead. Okay, so anyway, Tifton 85 grass. If you have any of that, I'm not even sure if you want to plow it under. Yeah, you don't want that stuff anywhere near. Let's see. So they're talking about other farmers now that had their Tifton 85 grass tested, all of them turning up with cyanide. Okay, so that's basically destroyed those ranches. Those farmers cannot use their ranch anymore. Let's see. Okay, here's an article that came in from a listener on written in from the Sun Media newspaper. And at any rate, it's criticizing Obama's program, energy program. And I've heard from other people, too, in the energy industry, what a boondoggle this program was. $9 billion for a solar program. And this is just one of the many programs. When they throw these big lumps of money into programs, it usually goes down the drain into a lot of people's pockets. $9 billion shot, 900 jobs created out of this at the rate of about close to $10 million per job. Now, the employees in these jobs are certainly not getting this money. They wouldn't even get $1 million in a total lifetime of work. So this is a tremendous shot of money into the pockets of Obama and of Obama's buddies. But remember that if a Republican were in there, the money would simply go into their buddies' pockets. And I've said this before, that this dog and pony show of changing between Republicans and Democrats is a political thing in which the buddies of the politicians get the money. But that's the local level. That's the greed level that keeps driving this phony dog and pony show, fake democracy that we live in. So at any rate, but the other criticism here, which I like, is part of what I've been talking about, the planned failure of alternative energy, solar and wind, the way it is implemented now, was a planned failure. It was always known in inner circles that this would fail, so that people, investors, the public's interest would be invested in these completely inefficient, very expensive, completely inefficient methods of trapping what we call green energy, solar or wind, basically. And so this turned into a big subsidized industry, and worldwide also. The wind industry and the solar industry would not exist if it were not for tremendous government subsidies. And that tells you right there that it's a boondoggle, and it also tells you that a lot of these big companies are making huge profits, and they wouldn't make a dime if they had to compete in the real world, in the real marketplace. But also they're destroying the reputation of green energies, so that when real systems are presented on the market, if they ever are, they won't get consideration because people have already thrown all their money into green energy and it failed. So investors are going to be very, very skeptical of putting money into green energy in the future, if you see what I mean. But in the meantime, there's some people that made millions and millions and millions. Well, let's put it this way. $10 billion went into somebody's pocket out there. Lots of nice big piles of money moving around, and no record of it. Okay, the NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter spacecraft has returned data, it says. Researchers estimate ice content of crater on Moon's south pole. Well, that would imply that there is some ice there. You know what they found? It's a little lighter in color than other craters. Oh, that would tell us for sure that there's ice there. And, of course, NASA needs this to spur on its manned moon mission, which they think might pull off in about 2050 after all of us will be long dead and gone. But at any rate, I want to go through this article just to show you how fake this is. And by the way, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, remember, under the watchful eye of the University of Arizona Astronomy Department, was supposed to return to us unprecedented detailed pictures of the alleged Apollo landing sites. Well, what we got were a couple pictures with, oh, maybe two or three pixels scratched into the middle, and it looked like a pencil line where somebody kind of drew a little pencil line around on the photo where the supposedly the lunar rover went. And now you're telling me my phone camera would take a better picture than they released of these lunar landing sites. Literally, my phone camera would do a better job than what they released. This was the most, and they announced that and announced it, and everybody was waiting to see these high detailed pictures of the NASA lunar landing sites. Well, why couldn't they release them? Because it would be pretty hard to match up all the rocks and the stones and the boulders and all the other things with the shadows. There's a lot of smart people out here who know how to analyze photographs, and it would be really impossible, and they know it. It would be impossible for them to fake those detailed photos. So the easiest thing to do is take a broad picture from far away with very bad pixel resolution and put that out and say, well, here are really good pictures. And they were really bad. Really, really bad. I mean, a third grader would be embarrassed. At a third grade science fair, a third grader would be embarrassed to put out what NASA put out for these photos of the alleged lunar landing site. But now they're at it again. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter crew at NASA is claiming that they have found water at the South Pole. But what did they really find? Well, I'll just read what their announcement is. And by the way, published in the journal Nature. That's the equivalent of Science. Science is the U.S. Tier 2 kind of mouthpiece science journal. Peer-reviewed, mind you. I always love that. Peer-reviewed. What a lie. What a complete lie. These people just publish this stuff. Nobody looks at it. They just print it. But in England, they're publishing in the journal Nature. It sounds respectable. Sounds pretty good to me, but when it comes to space science, Nature and Science are just a tier two science mouthpiece. So the NASA team says that using laser altimeter, looking at the floor of the Shackleton crater near the south pole of our moon, they found the crater's floor is brighter than those of other nearby craters, which is consistent with the presence of small amounts of ice. This information will help researchers understand crater formation and study other uncharted areas of the moon, published in the Thursday's edition of the journal Nature. So they say that the brightness of this crater has been, well, why did all of a sudden the ice just kind of concentrated in that crater? And if something came in like their supposed dirty snowball ice, like comet, and made this crater, the ice in that heat of making this crater would have evaporated and gone. It would have been bye-bye for any ice or volatiles. And so it just, you know, and then you would see this in other craters. They're looking at the South Pole because it's supposedly colder. The sun does not get there as often, but the sun does hit the crater rim consistently and at an angle, quite a broadside angle, in fact. It hitting the crater rims, and there's as much of this light-colored material there as there is in the crater basin. They started out trying to find or trying to look for a brighter color in the basin, only to find that the entire basin, including the walls of the crater, have this brightness also. But then they say that the walls were even brighter, which would mean there was more ice up on the side where the sun hits. Counterintuitive, but don't tell that to the NASA scientists. But they also, I love when they put this in, that the Shackleton revealed a remarkably preserved crater that has remained relatively unscathed since its formation more than 3 billion years ago. Okay, so they looked into this crater with a telescope orbiting overhead, shined a laser in there, and determined 3 billion years? What rabbit's hat did they pull this number up? Do you see the bad science going on here? It's just absurdly bad science. It's scientists that have no idea what they're talking about, saying things, publishing it in the journal Nature. And I'm sorry for wasting my good airtime on this, but this is important because you see how important it is for NASA to use your dollars, your resources that should be going into space for this ridiculous Tier 2 science and supporting these ridiculous Tier 2 scientists. And then this none of this made any sense. So some guy, and I've seen this when I was at Cornell, and sitting in these scientific meetings, something would come up on the screen, and they would say, well, what causes this? And some guy go, well, maybe this. Maybe there were some earthquakes and something hit it. And so, that's a good idea. So that gets published, and then 20, 30, 40 years later, that idea is still there. Nobody questions it. Let's move on. And so that's what they did here. They said a theory offered by the team to explain the puzzle is that moonquakes, seismic shaking brought about by meteorite impacts or other gravitational tides from Earth, may have caused Shackleton's walls to slough off older, darker material, revealing newer, brighter soil underneath. Well, how come it only happened in that crater, Mr. Team of High Specialized NASA Scientists? How come it only happened in the Shackleton crater and not the crater next door? Well, they don't bother answering that. You see, it takes really about a first grade intelligence to poke holes in this ridiculous science. Okay, on to the important thing is, though, to understand the level of money that's going in to support Tier 2 science. Okay, on to the next topic. Here a listener writes in from Canada and says, I listened to your, this is from Robert, says, I listened to last Thursday's show and you mentioned all the rain precipitation that was is still falling around the world. And I did. I went through a litany of the different places where severe weather was occurring. And it's, the listener goes on to say, well, that observation hasn't slipped by me either. During the last 2 weeks, it has poured rain in southern Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where I live. I know it's much the same in most of the countries around the planet. Do you have any knowledge of why the planet is encountering so much water from space, as you talked about on your show? I know that the water cycle couldn't possibly be the cause of all this rain simply because the planet's surface, etc. It goes on. Okay, so he's talking about how high the lake levels are in this area of Canada. Well, okay, I'm going to contrast that with the fires in Colorado. Right now, Colorado as a state is just on fire, the whole central portion of the state. And I've talked before about climate control, in other words, the long-term ongoing control of climate. Could these conditions be controlled by somebody up there with laser satellites that make sure that it really rains in some places and not in others? Where's the other article that I have on Bangladesh? Here it is. Heavy rains and floods in Bangladesh, hundreds killed. And I thought this was interesting that the majority of people killed in this, of course, there was flooding, there was drowning, and the other mudslides, etc., that go along with the disaster with torrential rains. but many people were killed by lightning. So there's a lot of lightning in these storms, indicating, and of course, I watch solar conditions. We have not had that heavy solar conditions, what you would call major flares from the sun, CMEs, sunspots that blast out huge flares towards Earth. We have not had those. We have not had those. And so what's causing all of the conditions here on Earth? One possibility is that the region that we're in, the conditions in the solar system are such that it's the electrical conditions in the solar system. Well, what's causing that? Okay, then the other situation is, could some of this activity be caused by people playing with their laser satellites? Some people talk about HARP. HARP is an old technology. The latest, greatest way to affect weather is with lasers, satellite lasers, where you can beam down, control weather, simply by discharging. What does that do? That discharges the capacitor between the ionosphere and ground of Earth, and you can move storm systems, you can cause low cells, or you can move low cells away from dry areas, maintaining them dry. Why would they want to destroy central Colorado? Well, a lot of independent people live in central Colorado. That's an area, so the military trucks, from what I understand, are just rolling down the streets telling people to get out. I've tried to get some information from friends there, and it's very difficult because the people there they're scattered. They're in other words, they're moving, they're leaving, they're being evacuated. So it's hard to get real information back. So is this a possibly a weather control issue where it's raining heavily in one area, just almost next door, southern Calgary, Alberta, just north of Colorado? They're getting tremendous amounts of rain in other places around the world. Why is it selectively deciding to miss Colorado? At any rate, I'm going to go on with another topic here. This is an article that showed up on CNN. I sometimes go there, but this was an article that kind of brought interest to me. There's a lot of plagiarism and false self-proclaimed kind of scientists out there today, people that claim to be physicists, plasma physicists, doctors, call themselves doctors, and people who have no college education at all. How do you become a physicist when you've never cracked a physics book? You've never had a physics job. You've never done anything as a professional in physics. And you're a plasma physicist? I think some people are some Looney Tunes out there. But anyway, there's kind of a mold that these people come out of. And anyway, so I found this article interesting. Here's a con artist who pilfered scores of historical documents gets 7 years. A federal judge on Wednesday sentenced a self-proclaimed presidential historian who once claimed to have moved among White House circles. He sentenced him to 7 years in prison for conspiracy and theft of historical documents worth more than $1 million. So at any rate, here's a guy, 63, admitted in a plea bargain agreement to have stolen from museums in Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, and he had to repay $46,000 to three dealers who bought documents from him, knowing that they were stolen and forfeit, and returned more than 10,000 documents found in his New York apartment. So here, these are people are psychopaths. And, you know, I like the picture here because these people all look the same, that little goatee beard, pretend scholar. And he had an accomplice. They always have an accomplice, somebody that's helping them out. And so I want to point out that this is just like the internet people. There's people out there claiming electric universe and that they are somehow scholars of ancient mythology or are doctors in electric, plasma physics or something. These people are nothing more than con men. Everything on their page is stolen from someplace else. And these are psychopaths. These are people that really have never done anything in their lives. You know, they sit in grandma's basement and try and project that they are something that they're not. But you can do that on the internet today. The thing that a lot of people, when they first become acquainted with the topics in my work on the electrical conditions in the universe, they end up at one of these sites and they go, isn't that interesting? And they typically will write an email or something, and then somebody from or somebody else points out to them that no, these people are a bunch of con artists. They're stealing material from McCanny and referencing other people who have done other work. And so when they're questioned, what is their original work? And that's the one key element there. Where's their paper trail and where is their original work? You all of a sudden get a blank stare. You don't get a response, and that's because there isn't any. They don't have any original work. But what I'm saying is that the world today is filled, you know, on one side of the coin you have the government tier two science, the garbage science, which is purposely pawned off on the public. And then on the other hand, you have a bunch of kind of psychos out there. And these people all fit into one bin. The one key is self-proclaimed. I like that. And so this article hits the nail right on the head. By the way, the term electric universe is found in my original papers, which I wrote back in the 70s. And so these clowns come along in about the year 2005, form a web page, and start using the term electric universe, which was stolen from my work as I ended one of my papers that was published back in the late 1970s, in which I summarize and I say that as you go through all of the points that I was making, you could make a case for the electric universe. That's where that term comes from. And of course, like any con man, they try and dance around that topic. I got an email from a listener this past week, another one who had fallen into that trap, and said, are you aware of these people who are making a lot of claims that sound just like your work? And so anyway, every now and then on the air, it's good to review this because a lot of people fall into that trap. But at any rate, self-proclaimed, you look at these people, and they all come out of the same bin. They all come out of the same mold, self-proclaimed, borrowing other people, and they have no conscience. They really think that they're important people or intelligent, but they have nothing to say. That's the other key. They're like Johnny One Notes. They say one thing and then repeat it and then repeat it and then repeat it with no content. Just cotton candy from the circus. I just want to quick mention the lower level of oxygen in the atmosphere. We are burning oxygen at a torrid rate on this planet. And so the air that we're breathing now is much lower in oxygen content than it was 50 years ago. But of course, there's no government study that's going to tell you that. The air freshness, the air quality, between radiation pollution, between desertification, where we are plowing under forests and green areas where plants grew, turning it into desert. Just the central United States, that whole breadbasket, what we used to call the breadbasket, that food-growing area of central United States, the most I'm having problems with that. The area that is most desert-like on the entire planet is in the central United States, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, southern Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska, southern Minnesota, the southwestern Dakota. Did I say Nebraska? But at any rate, Kansas. Those states are basically desert. They have been Monsantoed into the ground. The only thing that grows there in the summer is corn. And when they cut that, you're left with basically a desert. Nothing will grow there. I talked a week ago about the farm fields that were not planted, where farmers didn't have enough money to plant their fields. This was like a year ago. I was out driving through that area. And desert. Nothing grows there. Not even a weed. You have like little weeds having a real tough time just trying to sprout out in those fields. Just desert. Nothing will grow there. Only the Monsanto corn with the Monsanto-designed herbicides and fertilizers. At any rate, another topic here, I said I was going to talk about the National Public Radio, NPR article, that some guy who's their standard meteorologist saying that the storm in Duluth, this torrential rain that rained for about one day, dropping 10 to 12 inches of rain, they said it was there was 3 feet of water at the top of the hill. It was a statistics that I heard, and I saw the videos on of the water rushing down the street after the storm. The water was still coming down a foot deep down the hillside, the steep hillsides of Duluth. And so there's some clown out there saying, well, this is the result of global warming. And I just about fell off my chair. This was a little storm, a small storm. The rest of the United States was bone dry, not a cloud in sight. This one storm moved up through western. It began forming kind of at the corner of South Dakota, Iowa, and Minnesota, kind of at that corner of the southwestern Minnesota. And that storm built, and within a few tens of hours, created enough water so that it dumped a foot of water out of the sky on that town of Duluth. It looked to me like water bombing. But all of the water in that storm came from that locale. There was no water anyplace else in the United States. Global warming? I don't think so. Could this have been a man-made storm? It could have been. I don't know. But the point is that that storm formed in the middle of the night, and the water gathered into that storm locally. That storm did not exist as that weather system was moving across the southwestern part of the United States. There was no water to be had in the southwestern United States as that weather system moved. And all of a sudden it starts forming. Within about a 10-hour period, it gathered all that water and then dumped it on Duluth. Very specifically on Duluth. There was rain outside of that region, but it was targeted on Duluth. Was that weather bombing? Water bombing Duluth? It sure looked like it to me. Somebody might be having a little fun with our satellite laser, their toys that we built and under the control of psycho people in the government and the military, basically. Another listener-initiated topic here is one of real jobs. When you have, I was talking about the Obama program for green energy, where it costs $10 million per job. And, you know, of course, the worker is going to get about, what, $40,000 a year out of that? All the rest of that money going into somebody's pocket on overhead or whatever. But I wanted to talk about real jobs versus what I call leech jobs. Or support jobs. When in the past we would have called them support. But real jobs are jobs that produce value, things that people need to live. So like farmers and food, real food, etc., or other products, clothing, housing that we need to live in, maintenance of housing. Those are real jobs. jobs that are not real jobs, things we call jobs which are not real jobs, government, insurance, oddly enough, medical. A lot of money that goes into medical is not necessary. There's a lot of medical, and I've talked and kind of pounded on this in previous weeks. On, for example, we did an analysis, just kind of a back of the envelope analysis, that the medical industry in hospitals wouldn't exist if it were not for chemotherapy. It is one of the biggest money makers on the planet for these, for the medical industry, and we're all paying big time for this. That's one of the big problems with medical, which is, of course, I didn't get into that today, but the Supreme Court decision on medical, that we're all paying and going to pay dearly for the standard medicine that's being put out today, especially chemo and other medical practices, because personally, I wouldn't go to chemo. I don't want insurance that pays for chemo. If somebody wants chemo, that's their business. But in Europe, they don't use chemo. Other parts of the world, they don't use chemo. It's only in the good old U.S. of A. where the doctors are Johnny One Note locked into chemo. Why? Because the hospital, the whole industry makes a boatload of money off of it, off the suffering of cancer patients in this country. And as I said once before, there's evidence that a lot of the cancer in this country is a direct result of viruses that were in shots that people got throughout their life, starting with the Salk polio cancer, polio vaccine, which had up to 32 cancer-causing viruses in those shots. So that's why a lot of the people who were got those shots as kids, or the tablets, the oral version of the Salk vaccine, could be developing cancer at an early age today when they should be living easily to 100 years old. They're starting to get cancer in their 60s and 70s. I want to end with a discussion of itemized billing. This is something that has really been a problem in this country with insurance, with telephone bills, etc. Something that has destroyed this country. The very last thing, I want to announce a new product that I have. It's a calendar device for determining calendars. It's a release that's just coming out. It's just hitting the streets right now, so make sure you go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is for emergency. You can learn how to use this using our current calendar. But it basically allows you, in case of an emergency, a poll shift, or just other government disaster, to recreate the calendar and have a sun clock. It's a very timely, important product, only available on my webpage. Go there and see this. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.